You're going to feel like adjusting your clock both hours today. We got EWTN Morning Superstars with us each hour. Second hour, Matt Swaim will be here for us. And second hour, we're doing with Matt a kids open forum. So if you are a kid who has permission to dial, or if you are an adult who has a kid who'd like to ask a question of Matt Swaim, any question at all about the faith, about God, about the Bible, they're all welcome. And Matt will be happy to take those calls. This hour, even earlier in the morning on EWTN, we have our guest this hour is Gloria Purvis. You know Gloria if you get up early enough at 7 a.m. Eastern time to listen to Morning Glory with her and with Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. And who else you got on there?
On Friday, Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, Monsignor Charles Pope. Tuesday, Father Bjorn Lundberg. And on Thursday, Father Vincent De Rosa.
Thank you. Couldn't remember all your priests.
That's okay, you know. Right? You're like, why has you got all these priests?
We got only one.
You're like keeping it simple.
You're right.
You got one priest, not many names, remember? There you go.
In addition to being one of the hosts of Morning Glory on EWTN, she is one of the creators and hosts of Authentically Free at Last, a 13-part EWTN series and DVD about the nature of true freedom. She's the chairperson for Black Catholics United for Life. She's also one of the world's greatest Twitterers. And you can find her at Gloria_Purvis on there. Gloria, thanks for being here with us.
You know, I love talking to you, Si. I love coming on Catholic Answers. It's great. So thank you for, you know, inviting me to come back. So love talking to you.
Well, we didn't give you an easy topic this time. And we don't have to. There's not a rule that we have to talk about race every time we have Gloria on.
It's cool. I don't mind.
But the whole issue of reparations has come up recently. And it's a good entry point, I think, to talk about difficult issues. And I think basic Christian charity and also common decency requires us not to ignore the suffering of any person or any group, whatever its origin or nature. And certainly, this is an idea that has been floated around to address suffering among African American people. So you talked about it on your show. How'd that go? Did that go over good?
You know, actually, some of the emails later on were, you know, I was like, oh, we're supposed to be Catholics, people. Let's not let political talking heads mar the conversation, to come at this from a perspective of people of faith, and also to be willing to look at history. I mean, I think what I learned in talking about, what I did was went and looked at the actual language of the bill that's in Congress and in the Senate that's there talking about reparations. And what people don't realize is that the bill itself says we want to create a commission to study reparations, and then based on that study, develop what would be reparation proposals for African Americans. And some people think that it's just dealing with slavery. It wasn't just slavery. It's the institution of slavery. They say both transatlantic and the domestic trade, and also to look at the jure and de facto discrimination against freed slaves and their descendants from the Civil War to the present, including economic, political, educational, and social discrimination. And they're like, we want to address what are the lingering negative effects of the institution of slavery and the discrimination, you know, subsequent to that. And I have to say, I was surprised by some of the responses from people who identify as Catholic in writing. You know, some person was like, I am so tired of hearing about this. I don't want to even deal with this anymore. And I was like, well, we're talking about the link, really, from a Catholic perspective. What are the lingering effects of sins, you know, of this big sin? And how can we make repair? And it seemed like the notion that anything that had to do with money would be just out of bounds, right? And I'm like, do people even realize that we've paid reparations before in this country? In fact, we paid reparations to Japanese Americans and their descendants who were wrongfully put in internment camps during World War II. And that was like about $1.6 billion that was paid out. It almost as if the whole fact or talking about it could possibly be financial just seems to really sit in some people's craw. As if this is wronging white people to make any kind of, even the idea of it being any kind of financial payout, people, some of the responses I've seen is if that somehow penalizes white Americans. And I'm like, well, y'all have jumped the gun, number one. It's not necessarily, first of all, let them study the issue. Let them study how other countries have dealt with things like reparations. Let's study the history. And one of the things they also talk about is they want to recommend, as a part of the study, they want to recommend appropriate ways to educate the American public about the commission's findings. You know, and part of what they do is to study the institution of slavery and the things that happen thereafter. So, you know, and I, as a Catholic, I'm like, we, as the body of Christ, who say we love each other, who say we're all made in the image and likeness of God, we should be able to come together and discuss it ourselves, you know?
That's the thing, so you're advocating, let's have the conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So fair enough. I have to say, I get a set, we try to talk about moral issues from a Catholic perspective.
Sure.
I feel almost myself allergic to talking about political issues because I think that's not our job. We don't solve political problems. We try to share what the Catholic faith teaches. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that being said, a lot of people, maybe even the majority of people, will say, okay, the racial issue, particularly as between white and black people in America, mm-hmm. has become a kind of get out the vote thing for the Democratic Party. Do you see what I'm saying? It's almost like, well, you say, well, I want to talk about it on a moral level. Well, mm-hmm. you can't talk about it on a moral level because the whole thing is just trying to get people to vote for Democrats.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what do you say to that?
I would say that it's... Well, we wouldn't say we don't talk about abortion, right? Because then it only gets people out to you know, vote for, quote, Democrats. I think it's and also we have a role as people of faith. We don't abandon our voice in the public square. And if not us, who? Who should be talking about it? I mean, I think we have the moral framework to deal with this. We have an understanding of justice. In our faith, we certainly understand reparations, right?
Yeah.
Think about Christ as the... example par excellence. I mean, he came and made repair for our sins, something he never committed, so we had the chance to get into heaven. So, yeah. You know, the notion that we shouldn't talk to or deal with the issue of reparations, slavery, and the things that resulted after that would be an error. And our bishops even, you know, encourage us to talk about racism. Because make no mistake, slavery could not have happened if there weren't a false idea that Africans were to be subjugated and were less than human. Mm-hmm. You see that original sin of not seeing these people made in the image and likeness of God and being, you know, worthy of being treated properly. If we can't go from there and talk about what the effects of these sins are, how will it ever get addressed? How can we ever start to discuss how do you make amends for this wrong and the lingering effects of it?
Right. And I would, okay, so let me put it to you in these terms and see if this resonates with you.
Yeah.
A young black man, let's say he's just 17 or 18 years old, mm-hmm. or a young black woman, same age, 17 or 18 years old, mm-hmm. that person maybe feels less welcome mm-hmm. in America, whether it's in the mall or at McDonald's or, yeah. you know, or
Starbucks.
Don't even get me started about Starbucks.
Right, so, right.
But I feel like at the very least, what I would think our Christianity demands of us is that mm-hmm. the other person feel welcome, feel valued. Like, mm-hmm. we don't want you to go away somewhere else. We want you to be here with us.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I would like to know, is reparations, to your mind, would that help us get closer to that? Or are there other things that we need to do to get closer to that?
I mean, I think that outside of reparations, what gets us closer to that is actually loving them. You know, I was reading, a long time ago, I read across a lot of ideologies because I want to know what a lot of people think. And it's not that I agree with bell hooks at all. She's known as a womanist, feminist, black woman feminist. But I remember in one of her books, she said the most radical act is to love black people. And I sat and I thought about that. And when we had the, when the bishops got together in Orlando, Florida a few years ago, and we had the convocation, one of the speakers, Dr. Ansel Augustine, I think he said, did he say he wanted everybody to say black is beautiful?
Yeah.
Like, and he had the whole audience saying that. And he was like, you know, for some of you, that would be the first time you have said that. And afterwards, this man came up to me really bothered. And he was like, you know, everybody's beautiful. And I was like, yeah, of course. He was like, I didn't think that was right to say black is beautiful. And I was like, well, why is saying black is beautiful make you assume that that means nobody else is? And I, and so I was trying to explain to him that to come at this from a position of typically what is black has not been considered beautiful. Our features have not been considered beautiful. Our hair has not been considered beautiful. I mean, I think California, was it California? Just passed something to make sure that people are not, black people are not discriminated against for wearing their natural hair as it grows out of their head, the way God made it in, you know, the workplace. So we have some things culturally to deal with. And we just need to look at the history of things. It's not untrue to say what is black has not been considered beautiful or the norm for beauty or a measure by which something is beautiful. And so I was starting to see a lot of, you know, that kind of reaction. I was like, oh, how could this have been taken, you know, as a negative, considering the context and history in this country, you know, to not see that as something more affirming, to say, you know, black is beautiful, because you don't often hear that or see that, or is that, you know, even, you know, patterned out there in our society. Just a few thoughts there, you know?
888-318-7884 is our number. We're talking race and reparations with Gloria Purvis from the Morning Glory Show each morning, 7 a.m. on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Yeah. We'd love to have you participate. 888-318-7884. And we'll of necessity have to cover some history as we do this, but on a different kind of history. We got all kinds of church history on sale right now at shop.catholic.com. Was probably the cheesiest segue ever done in radio right there. I think that might have been the most cheesiest. But in any case, dozens of great history CDs, books, DVDs, all on sale. Just go to shop.catholic.com, click on the Deep in History banner, and check out the deals.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at catholic.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
All people are called to communion with Christ in the church that he founded.
People really gravitate to David Anders and his concern for the callers.
Tom and I are both converts. We've walked that path, and we try to walk it with the listeners at whatever stage of the journey they're on.
It's EWTN's go-to source for non-Catholics, converts, and answer seekers.
Call to Communion TV with Dr. David Anders, Sunday afternoon, 4 Eastern, on EWTN Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, touching the third rail of American politics this hour, or of American social life. 888-318-7884 is the number. Gloria Purvis is our guest, and this may be the last time you hear me on the. No, I don't think that'll happen. Our other morning superstar, Matt Swain, will be here next hour. I'm just kind of scrolling through some of the comments on social media as we talk, and people taking different views, but. I'm going to tell you, Gloria, I believe in things like school vouchers. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes think, well, why don't we just like say, let's give every black family in America a voucher to go to, their kids can go to any school that they want. And I feel like that's a little bit sneaky on my part because I actually, I think.
Go to the Catholic schools, everybody.
Because they'll all go to Catholic schools, right?
Hey, I'm with
and,
you.
And they'll find out that Jesus loves them and all that instead of what they're getting in the public school.
Amen.
Would that be a possibility? Like, if we had this commission on reparations, is it possible that people would, like, here's another issue that we people in the West think about. People in the East, like yourself, Gloria, y'all never think about this, but Western states are pretty much owned by the federal government. I mean, the worst one is Nevada. Nevada is, I think, 92 or 93% federal land. California, I think we're like 60% federal land. Why don't we just give that land to people?
Well, that was a part of the, originally, it was supposed to be 40 acres and a mule. Supposed to be given to newly freed slaves and, you know, they didn't do that. And what's interesting to me is through the D.C. Emancipation Act, do you know former slaveholders that were loyal to the Union got $300 per slave?
Oh, so we gave reparations to slave owners.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
As long as they were loyal to the Union, but we didn't give any reparations to the slaves.
Right, mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I don't know if anybody really needs 40 acres and a mule anymore. I'm almost sure they don't need the mule.
Right. But what would be the equivalent,
but,
right?
But, like, we got stuff other than money, is what I'm saying. And that these could... Okay, well, let me ask you this then. One other thing. And I'm going to the phones. People, don't worry. I'm gonna let you talk with Gloria. 888-318-7884, the number. Mm-hmm. Now I forgot what I was going to say, Gloria. Darn, it was such a good point.
Well, in terms of other things other than money, I mean, that's something that the commission wants to study. They also want to look at how international standards of remedy for wrongs and injuries caused by the state... that include full reparations, special measures, like how else would everybody else do it?
Yeah.
And they would talk about, well, how would the government of the United States offer a formal apology on behalf of the people of the United States for the perpetration of really what's a gross human rights violation, which is enslavement of these free Africans and the results on their descendants. So, and also the enslavement of their descendants and things like that.
Right.
So, and also looking at the federal laws and policies that, you know, we're intentional discrimination. I don't think people recognize FHA, our federal government, was behind redlining.
Yeah.
Some of these things are just so shocking when you start to look at the history. And it's sad. You're like, you know, why couldn't the government do right? And then when you look at some of the things that some of the state governments did, yeah, we have had some real problems, y'all. Real problems.
Yes, right. And I guess this was the other point I wanted to make before I went to the callers and see what you thought. What if we, okay, maybe it would be more comfortable for some people if we didn't say reparations for slavery or didn't talk about repairing old injustices, but just said, look at America right now, and what you see is a certain set of injustices.
Yeah.
What would it take for us to move from this state to a state where there wasn't this level of injustice, you know?
You know, I think if we did, if you think of South Africa, they have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, can we just go and admit and identify the things that were intentional practices by our government against some of our own citizens?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what the commission plans to do. This bill may never get passed, but these are some of the things listed. And to me, this is such an easy win for the Republicans to be like, yeah, well, let's study it. That to me was such an easy win for them to say, sure, let's study this. Let's look at the proposal. What comes out of it? Let's have a discussion. And by the way, the President of the United States gets to appoint three members to the commission. Three members shall be appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives. One member shall be appointed by the President pro tempore of the Senate. And so I was like, this would be such a win for us to just get together and discuss it. And I would have loved to have some Catholics on that commission. You know, you look at what happened in Georgetown. You know, that they identified, oh my gosh, we did sell all these people off to Louisiana for money, and what can we do to make repair for that? And so Georgetown then said, we're going to treat descendants of these slaves pretty much with a, you know, admissions bump like we do for alumni, children of alum, and children of current teachers, professors there.
But then the problem with that is then you have to go to Georgetown. Oh, sorry. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. That was Boston College talking.
Right.
But you're right. Like, there's also, I don't know. There's so many ways to go on it.
So this is one of the things that they say in the commission, the actual letter. The document says how the injuries from matters described, you know, that we just talked about, can be reversed and provide appropriate policies, programs, projects, and recommendations for the purpose of reversing the injuries. So they're just want to get and study and say how to actually try to start to begin to tackle this. You know,
It does seem that there's when I was a kid, I'm older than you are. I was a kid when you'd see people say black is beautiful on TV, or when you just had this sense of something. You know, I remember Bill Cosby got Saturday morning cartoons on that had black people in them as first. So you just had this sense, okay, we're making progress here. This is, and it feels like everything has stagnated into a general grumpiness about race. I don't know. I don't mean to use that as a flip term or, but just like, wait, when did we stop being hopeful? When did it become?
Right.
And I feel like we need something to move on to a positive track.
You know, I think sometimes the way things are presented in secular media can be meant to inflame. And so, for example, some people automatically think that when you talk about past or present wrongs, racial wrongs, that it necessarily condemns all non-blacks, particularly all whites. Let's just put it like
that.
Sure,
right.
And that's not... if you look at it, we're looking at what was the government's role in this? What did the U.S. government do? And this is what this is about. What did the U.S. government do that wronged Africans and their descendants through slavery, through peonage, through Jim Crow, through, not allowing people to vote by putting, poll taxes in. Also, what did the states do? So this is looking at what the government did and not, quote unquote, individual white people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I would say continues to do in some regards. I mean,
I
do
sure.
think trapping children in public schools in places where they clearly have gone 30, 40 years without working.
Yes.
Is a tremendous injustice.
It is.
A lot of public housing, frankly, is a tremendous injustice and a trap for people.
I agree.
I got to go to callers, though, Gloria.
Sure. Let's do this.
I've been very unfair. Bob in Kansas, listening on EWTN Radio. You are on with Gloria Purvis. Your question or comment, Bob?
Hello. I think this is a very interesting subject, and one of the things I first want to point out is that 9 generations ago, my grandfather started the very first school in the colonies and that was designed to cater to the education of the Indians, and had also made it mandatory that blacks had to be admitted as well. And that was in the Massachusetts area. Somewhere in the time of around 1661. But one of the things I want to ask you, and you started to touch on it, I think it's important, is the culpability of everybody. But the culpability, by making it more of what did the government do instead of the individuals, I think that's probably a really good direction to go. Because my question originally was, how do you make the people culpable who actually did this when they've long been dead for 100, 200 years? That's one part of it. And two, going back to the source, Africans were capturing Africans and selling Africans to the white traders.
Yep.
So how do you deal with that?
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so two things. The kind of slavery that they experienced in Africa was not the chattel slavery that they had in the United States. So what they were selling people to was not what their experience of slavery was. So, for example, and chattel slavery, which what we had in the United States, was different in that we would never be able to come and become full citizens under chattel slavery. It's not like chattel slavery in the United States was for life and then pivoted and became strictly race-based. So there was a difference in the type of slavery that these Africans were selling their fellow Africans too. And also generally the Africans that they were selling were not people of their tribe, probably were people that they conquered. So I would say the kinds of things, there's a difference there. I would say once we were in the United States, how the United States government chose to respond to those human beings is something that needs to be dealt with. So we're talking about specifically in our country and what how our government has treated the enslaved African and their descendants.
Bob, we got to take a break. I want to come back and see if that was satisfying to you or if you have a follow-up you would like with Gloria. Lots and lots of callers, however, so I will move fairly quickly for the next half hour through calls.
Sure.
Gloria Purvis is with us, and our topic, reparations and race in America.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
I'm Monsignor Charles Pope.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team discusses that you are not your sin.
Monday morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Wait, was that just Gloria? That was Gloria Purvis teasing back to Gloria Purvis on the show.
No.
It's like, okay, thanks, Gloria. By the way, in the month when you tease back to Catholic Answers, you know what you're supposed to do and you don't do it, Gloria.
They told me not to do that anymore. I was going to say, hey, Si. They were like, do not do that.
They
I was
said
like, okay.
That? Wait, who's EWTN? Okay, that's
fine.
That's
when I'm recording. I was like, hey, Si. They were like, don't do that.
Okay, that's fine.
I was like, all right.
Oh, my teases are going to be so bad now.
I love it. I'm like, you know, it's nice to say hi to the person.
Mm-mm. Guess
I
not.
Thought, you know,
mm-mm.
We're friends.
888-318-7884 is our number. Gloria Purvis is our guest. When we left, we were talking with Bob in Kansas. Bob, your response to Gloria.
Yes. One, I want to thank you also for tackling this. It's a very difficult question, and I'm really glad that you're doing it. So I applaud you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bob.
One of the things I'm really also curious about, because and I'm concerned that, you know, we had a country that at one time that was working so diligently to suppress the vote and also to keep people as less than human or only a percentage of human and all of that. And I find that completely appalling. And I'm proud to be from a state that fought against slavery.
All right.
And, you know, and I
And against Jesse James. thanks, Bob.
Kansas.
I appreciate that. 888-318-7884, the number. It is a hard thing to talk about. I want to, before I go back to the callers again, something occurs to me, and also I'm seeing this online a little bit on the social media responses.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this is a tough issue without question, but there's another issue that kind of dovetails with this one where we have, I don't think you will disagree with me on this, Gloria. We have created a kind of victimhood culture in America where everybody's like, it's like more, you get moral authority the more you're a victim of things. And do you have any concern that talking about reparations, that kind of thing, adds to the generalized victimhood culture?
No, I guess to me, to talk about these things happened, you know, I remember somebody saying to me, oh, you know, why would you even want to identify as a descendant of a slave? And I was like, because my being here is a testament to our victory. I'm thriving. I'm here despite, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I love my country. I am, you know, if I could bleed red, white, and blue, I would. And it's because I love my country that I'm like, we can talk about what has happened and its effects through to today. That's part of the commission, to talk about the things that happened through till today and try to say, how can we repair this? How can we start the hard work? I mean, I think some people, there's a book called Slavery by Another Name, The Re-Enslavement of Black Americans from Civil War to World War II, that won a Pulitzer, and also by Douglas Blackman. And some people are so unaware that after slavery, the blacks could be just arrested on site, accused of a crime, then be charged with outrageous fines, charged for the cost of their own arrests, put in front of a crooked judge that was on the take with a plantation owner. And then they were like, well, for these debts and for your crime, you'd be sold as forced laborers to coal mines, lumber camps, brickyards, railroads, quarries, and farm plantations. And people would just die there for the rest of their lives in this forced labor. And they use this forced labor, believe it or not, to build a lot of the roads. And so states started to see the benefit of this because you had this labor now building roads, and you had small town entrepreneurs, provincial farmers, dozens of corporations, including U.S. Steel, looking for cheap and abundant labor. And they called the name of the book Slavery by Another Name. So if people are interested in this history, we're not just talking about slavery. There are things that happen up through past slavery, up through today, that we need to deal with. And how do we deal with it? Let's talk about it.
Amen. All right. Bob, I got to let you go because, as I said, there are lots and lots of
folks who
want to talk about this. Let's go to Bill in Cleveland, Ohio, one of my top 10 favorite Ohio cities.
I used to live there for a hot minute.
In Cleveland?
I did, for like a hot minute. Yeah.
Well, it's moving up my list.
Right.
Bill, your question or comment for Gloria Purvis.
Oh, hi, how you guys? How you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I think it's going to get, I don't know, Gloria, how far do you want to go back? It's going to get kind of convoluted.
Well, what do you mean by it could get convoluted? What does that mean?
Well, the first slave owner in North America was a black guy from Angola.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, and that was from 1600 to 1670 he lived. His name was Anthony Johnson. So,
okay.
I don't know how far back you want to go, but blacks did legally own blacks in this country.
Yeah.
And whites owned whites, actually, too, in the very earliest days of this.
Oh, yeah, they did. And they talk about it, the National Museum of African American History, about this exactly. And they talk about, though, when slavery in the United States changed to be for life and strictly based on race.
Yeah.
So there was a change later in slavery in the United States. And so the question of the first slave owner, okay, he's a black man, okay. And I'm not sure what the point is there.
Operations, maybe we should DNA test everybody. I don't know how we're going to go about it.
Well, that's what the commission actually would be talking about. How do you look at who would be the African, who would be the current descendants of enslaved Africans, and then people after that who experienced the de jure and de facto discrimination from the Civil War to the present. So that's something that the commission would be studying. And honestly, I don't think it's something. I mean, for goodness sake, we saw putting a man on the moon. We can certainly figure this out, you know?
Well, we have to figure out who's going to pay and who's going to get paid. That's all.
Well, I think that's part of what the commission studies, right? That's one of the things that they say in the text that they want to study. What would be appropriate remedies? How have other countries dealt with situations like this? What have been the direct benefits to societal institutions, public and private, including higher education, corporations, religious and associational? These are the things that they're mentioning expressly in the bill itself to establish this commission to study reparation proposals, to study the history. So they want to look at this and try to come up with some answers, some proposals that people can, okay, look at, and what do we do next?
Does any part of you, Gloria, have anxiety around the issue of, okay, what if we did pay reparations and nothing really got better for anybody?
That
didn't turn out to be an answer that brought what we wanted it to bring.
I'd be surprised if that were the case. I don't have anxiety about it. I think, if anything, how could people then say your country hates you or your country this, when they're saying we're trying to make amends and we realize it's going to be a long work? It may not happen in my lifetime, meaning if they were to start a reparations program in my lifetime, it may not be in my lifetime that we see the end that we want to see, but I have hope that it'll eventually get there, whatever that is.
Fair enough. Bill, thank you very, very much for the call. Gloria Purvis is our guest. We're talking race and reparations today on Catholic Answers Live. Next hour, but I should say this again. If you've got kids, or if you are a kid who's allowed to dial the phone, second hour is kids call in. Any question you have, you want to know about God, you want to know about prayer, sacraments, the Bible, Jesus, Mary, anything like that, you are welcome to call. And we'll have another EWTN Morning Superstar on, and that will be Matt Swain.
Matt! Yeah. What's up, Matt?
Who I'm told is a little bit bummed that he has to follow Gloria Purvis,
because
it's not easy.
Oh, he's funny.
John in Ohio, listening to EWTN Channel 130 Sirius Satellite Radio. You are next with Gloria. Your question or comment, John?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. And I know that ineffective communication is probably one of the biggest problems we have in the world, of mine in the United States. But when you talk about a commission and you talk about the forgiveness, being Roman Catholic, I never understood why you would, we do a lot of bad things in this world, but why would you attach slavery? I mean, there are horrors beyond description that take place and are still taking place as we speak today. Mm-hmm. But Jesus tells us that forgiveness, there's no price tag on forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness is what he died for on the cross. So that we're forgiven for the horrors and the sins that we commit. And, of course, slavery, yes, you're absolutely right. Whether it's black or white, it's a sin. But Jesus never attached any type of monetarily number to say, okay, if you pay X, then the forgiveness will instantly happen. That's my first question. My second question is...
Let's deal with the first question and get to your second question. I think that's a misrepresentation of what the Reparation Commission is about. It's not about forgiveness. It's about justice. It's about repairing a wrong. And in our own faith, we do say where there is an injury that has a financial consequence, financial remuneration is an act of justice. If you remember in Scott Hahn, when he talks about his conversion to Catholicism, he talks about going back to, I can't remember if it was a record store or a bookstore before his days of, when he was not doing the right thing. He went back and said, I need to pay back for the things that I shoplifted from this store. Okay, because he was trying to repair for the wrong that he knew he did. So, I think that's a conflation. This is not about forgiveness. This is about justice. This is about repairing for an actual harm, and that the repair can be a financial one, can have financial remuneration. That's not contrary to what we believe as Catholics. So it's not about forgiveness. It's about justice and repairing for a wrong that has been done, not just once, in, like during slavery, but after that, the de jure and de facto racial and economic discrimination against African Americans and what the impact of that is on living African Americans.
John, your second point.
Second question is beauty. And that's, we have all kinds of people in this planet, you know, slant eyes, straight hair, black hair, blonde hair. Beauty is inward. It's in the heart. It's in the soul. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, because of your hair is straight or your hair is not straight or your skin is black or your skin is yellow. It's mm-hmm. in the heart and soul. Again, that's something, being Catholic, and I've been educated as well, very deeply, I understand. And am I a sinner? Absolutely. But I do understand those things.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry I disagree with you on the first point, very much so. It's not about justice.
Well, how so? Help me understand how you've come to understand that reparations is not about justice. Help me understand that.
Yeah, if justice is not the issue. The issue is forgiveness. This planet is not the ultimate. The ultimate is heaven, getting to heaven. And that's the rules, getting here. And we don't have to pay our way into heaven. It's already been done for us by Jesus.
If I may, though, John, we are required to be just to one another.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. God was just for all of us.
So if I steal something from you, John, if I steal something from you, is it just for you to say, I forgive you and I don't have to make repair for what I stole from you? I wouldn't have to give you back whatever it is that I stole?
George, God deals out justice, not us. He deals justice of whether when we die, we truly forgive.
I don't think we're disagreeing with that, but John, we are required to do justice. Like, one of the ways God deals out justice is he's going to punish us if we're unjust to one another. He's been very clear about that.
Justice is handed out and given to us by God in the Ten Commandments, in the Beatitudes, in what we do in the sacraments in church. I am stunned that you being on EWTN are taking, but I appreciate you letting me make my points.
Okay, John.
I hope, and I don't know who's on this commission and who runs this commission.
Well, nobody's on it yet. They don't have it yet. That's what we're talking about, you know, to be able to just to talk about it and to study it.
It kind of provides us an opportunity to have a conversation about racial issues and also to have the conversation that people are asking for about is it time to talk about reparations? Well, yeah. I feel like John apologizes for disagreeing with you on a point. I know Gloria is not a person who requires an apology for disagreeing with her. That's not the point. The point is we have to, there has to be a kind of relaxedness where we say, okay, let's have the conversation. That's my feeling about it. I feel like, okay, but that's fine, but let's talk about it. Because it's clear to me, and I'll say it again, that the kid, you know, the young man or woman, 18 or 19 years old, African American in this country, doesn't feel as welcome walking down the street or doing all the other things that we do as the white kid does. I'm not saying that to blame anybody or to put anybody down, but that's wrong. And so we have to keep working at it until that injustice is corrected. I'm just going to read you a comment from John on Facebook, and then we got to take a quick break, Gloria, and we'll come back to you. John says, if Congress will bail out Lehman Brothers and AIG, aren't black Americans too big to fail too?
I'm not okay.
I think it's interesting anyway.
Yeah,
we'll be right back with more conversation on race and reparations with Gloria Purvis.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
And we need to pray for all our world leaders and all those who are in such danger. See, in a day and age where people are getting further away from God, you get further away from goodness. Only God is good. You remember what our Lord said one day? Why do you call me good? He said, only God is good. Only God.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
You are listening to what we now call the Fearless Catholic Answers program. We're not afraid of any issue at all. We can talk about race. As long as Gloria is here to answer the questions. 888-318-7884, the number. We're talking about race and reparations. We go now to, man, I think race must be a big issue in Ohio because almost every call has been from Ohio today. What is going on there in Ohio? Beth in Ohio, listening on St. Gabriel Radio, you are very welcome here. Your comment or question for Gloria. Hi, Beth.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I didn't hear my name.
Oh,
that's okay. Hello?
Okay, yeah, go ahead, Beth. Mm-hmm. Sure. I'm sorry. But yeah, you are on the air, and Gloria is ready for your comment or question.
Okay. First, I'd like to say that I have a great compassion for anyone that had to live through what slaves lived through and being treated like that by other human beings. And I feel like it's I have mixed feelings because I feel like it's the past. It's over and done, and we can't turn back time. In my own life, there's things I've done that I've regretted, and I can't turn back time. And I'm not seeking any reparations from people that have harmed me in my own life. And so I offer it up as, you know, the pain of my choices. You know, what we all have consequences to live with when we get away from doing God's will. So I just want to say that... I heard you discussing about who's paying, you know, the reparation, who would pay the reparation, you know, would it be previous slave owners and their descendants?
The government. We talked the whole time about the role of the government in not just slavery, but the injustices to African Americans after that. I talked about, for example, the FHA being behind redlining. I talked about, we're looking at the role of the government in federal and state in terms of, you know, the government not doing what it's supposed to do. And I also talked about the example of Japanese Americans being interred during World War II and how the government, you know, Bill Clinton apologized to the Japanese Americans and their descendants, and they were paid reparations to the tune of like $1.6 billion. So it's from the government, because the government is who wronged their own citizens. And so the government here is wronging their own citizens. People who are citizens of the United States did not receive the full protection of the government. In fact, the government worked against their best interests.
How can we, you know, I always get a little bit leery about where the money actually goes when they bring up these things of paying out money and stuff. It seems like charities and whatnot, some of them are not very honest, and I don't think our government, I mean, I wish I could trust everything our government did, but it's very unsettling these days.
Well, that is a complicating issue, because wherever there's sums of money, there's going to be unscrupulous people.
True.
I don't know that that speaks to the central issue of how to repair this racial damage,
And I think that's one of the things that, again, the commission, at least according to the bill, they're like, let us study it. Let us look at this. Let us study it and let us come up with some proposals. And we can't even get to the point to even talk about it and study it for some reason. People just automatically jump to, well, I didn't do this, or and limiting it to slavery and acting if it's going to come out of their personal pockets. That's one thing that has been surprising to me, is the idea that somehow that any kind of financial reparation to living descendants of people that went through, you know, this kind of discrimination in our country somehow will automatically harm white people has been very, I don't understand that. That is, this has been really surprising me. I'm like, but we've already paid reparations to other people, you know, and white people, quote unquote, aren't necessarily harmed by that.
Plus, so everything that the government spends money on is African Americans' money just as much as white. I mean, they pay taxes too.
Right.
I do, though, I when you say that, I have a slight sensitivity about it, Gloria, mm-hmm. in this regard.
Yeah.
There can sometimes be a kind of pitting. In the history of the United States, there's been a kind of pitting black people against working class white people.
Yeah, which is so silly.
And in which working class white people's jobs were taken, for example, by the very slavery that you're talking about. That's where we get the idea of you know, the poor white Appalachian, for example, that has mm-hmm. no economic opportunity.
Right.
So there, whites are also a victim of what's being done by other whites.
Oh, yeah.
So do you, I'll just put it to you, I'll get you another call, but
sure.
How do we not make this an issue that divides people by resentment? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think, again, when they talk about let's study the history, let's study the impact, and they want to make known the results of their study. They want to make known the history that they looked at, and they want to educate the American public to this and say, and these are things that we looked at. Here's what, some suggestions that we've come up with. Here's some proposals. Let's look at this. So I think the intention isn't to create division, but to say, can we just have an honest look and start to tackle this and come up with some proposals, not just based on what we think, but how other places internationally have dealt with this and have had success, you know, and try to start from there. I don't know if I'm answering your question there, your comment there, Cy, but
no,
you know, I'm thinking.
Well, it's the most fraught topic that we have.
Right.
So, I want to get another caller in, though.
Sure.
Anthony in Georgia. Are you with us, Anthony?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hey, how are you guys doing?
Very well. You got to be kind of quick, though, because we're coming up against it.
Sure. So I want to say, Gloria, I agree with you for the most part. I think you brought up some very, very good points that kind of almost changed my mind a little bit.
Mm.
And especially if this brings more people to the church, if the church adopts this position, I think it would be, you know, well worth it.
Mm.
But my only concern would be, how well intentioned is it? You know, is it genuine if we only offer reparations to African Americans versus, you know, the other ethnicities that were slaves in the U.S.? Because if we don't, I'm kind of concerned it would be more pandering rather than genuine.
So remember, it's not about just slavery. It looks at slavery, and as a result of slavery, the historic and continued discrimination against African Americans. Were other people considered three-fifths of a man? Were other people then by race? You know, we had black codes. I don't think people realize that. They had actual laws specifically about limiting the movement of black people. And no other race has had that experience from slavery on down. That we've had in the United States against African-American peoples. If the histories were the same, I could see exactly what you are talking about, but it simply isn't. The histories haven't been the same. We had a civil rights movement because there were things done against black people specifically, but in law, in practice, and you don't see any other group have the same history that we do in the United States. You just don't. You don't see the same kind of, you don't, if you study things like the Elaine massacre, what happened in the Tulsa race riot, how the government, the local government helped bomb black, what they call Black Wall Street.
Yeah.
You don't see that happening anywhere
Tulsa,
else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there is no history of any group of people in all the history of Earth like African Americans.
It's true.
There is no history like it. It doesn't have a direct analogy anywhere.
Sure.
Gloria Purvis, I don't want to make life too easy on you. So next time you're on, I've already decided we're going to talk about transgenderism. All right?
Hey!
No, we are.
Love it. Okay.
I am not kidding. That's what we're having, because I know you are very smart in that regard. You're one of our great pro-life leaders as well.
Thank you.
No, we're not doing race next time.
That's fine. Let's talk transgenderism. I'm with you. I love it. We need to discuss it.
Gloria, you are a gift. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Bye. Love being here.
Matt Swaim next hour, and it's all kids. If you're a kid, start dialing.